What's happening, everyone? It is the Celtics Talk Podcast. Happy to be back with A. Sherrod Blakely, Chris Forsberg. And we have a special guest joining us on this episode, Danny Crawford, veteran NBA official, 31 years in the league as an official before retiring. Danny, thanks for joining us on the Celtics Talk Podcast.
Now, the pleasure's mine. It's good to talk to you guys, you know, because my whole career we tried to avoid you guys as much as we could. So, you know what? The pleasure's mine.
Yeah, I think about all those years, and there was a lot of head nodding between me and Danny through the years. Not a whole lot of words spoken.
I would see you in the hotel or something, and that was pretty much it, Sherrod.
Yeah. The one thing, Danny, that, you know, I always appreciated about you was just how you just kind of went about your business and handled your business day in, day out. I didn't realize that it had been 23 consecutive years where you did at least one NBA Finals game. My goodness.
You know what? I was in the right place at the right time. You know, so that's about all I can say. And you know, it's funny, now that I step back and look at my career, you know what? It is pretty interesting to see the number of games, and then to see the Last Dance and to see the intensity of those games. It's kind of, you know what? I get a little nervous watching them now.
Well, it's funny you should bring up the Last Dance, Danny, because, you know, just that last game that Michael played in Utah, you were among the officials on the floor for that.
Yes.
What do you remember about that game? And I'm real curious, Danny, what was the conversation like when you guys went back to look at that game and you're looking at that play that everyone talked about, even to this day, the sort of kind of but not really push off?
Well, first of all, the game itself was so intense and so close, and it was so physical. It was just a very, very tough game to referee. But, you know, in answer to your question about that last play, we went back to the locker room and saw it once, and we left. You know, so it was you guys that were going off and, you know, going crazy and all that stuff about it. We saw it once and we walked out.
Danny, what is it about that play? So, I mean, is it because Russell is stumbling already? Is it clear in your mind that there is no push off?
Chris, you know what? There's a thing that we talk about in refereeing. Call what you see what you call. And that play is a difficult play, and it's a debatable play. So you can put that play in front of 100 people, and you're going to go 50-50 on that play. So with that being said, as a referee, when you're refereeing that play, if you clearly see a push, you call a push. But that play, even now looking at it on video, you see various angles, and you don't know if it's a push or not a push. And you can't base it on what happened to Russell. Okay, because if you blew the whistle based on what happened to Russell, easy call to make. But you got to call what you see, what Jordan does, and you don't see it. And when you see it, you say, you know what? I don't know if that was a clear-cut push. So you damned if you do, damned if you don't. And that play is left up for all these sports fans to debate. And it's a beautiful thing.
Is that the one play that has been debated most in your career, you think, that you've called, you know, a game that you've reffed? Or have there been other plays where you look back and say, man, people are still talking about that play?
That's the biggest – well, there's two plays. That's the biggest play ever. But I also had game five in New York, Chicago and the Knicks. And we had that foul Davis and Pippen. The foul was called on Pippen. Mm-hmm. That play was probably the most debatable play because I live in Chicago. So, you know, they're wearing Hugh Hollins out even to this day about that play. So the two plays, yes, the potential push off and then the foul potential on Scottie Pippen.
What was that like, Danny, being Chicago native, being an official, knowing that whenever – were you kept away from doing many Chicago games, or was it just randomly you wound up with those games? And when you did wind up with those games, how was that for your friends? I mean, it's like, hey, Danny, my guy, Chicago, Michael Jordan, what do you got for
– You know what? None of that came into play. You know, when you referee, there's like such a concentration. You block out everything else. So it really doesn't come into play at all. My mom, though, you know, when Chicago would lose and I would referee one of Chicago's games, she would give me a little heat. But for the most part, that never came into play at all.
That's too funny. Danny, I've been waiting a decade to ask you this question. One of my first seasons covering the Celtics, they go to the finals in 2010. Game 7 against the Lakers, a tough, like, low-scoring game. The end of that game, I'm coming down the media elevator, and I see Rasheed Wallace standing outside the referee's locker room. And my journalistic instinct says, I can't go anywhere. I have to figure out what he's doing. And all we can hear him screaming is, Danny, I just want to talk. What was it? Can you just lead me through what it was like being in the referee locker room there? Did you know that – was Rasheed coming in peace, his final game? What would he remember from that night?
Number one, it's amazing that you saw that. You know, because, you know, I was thinking about that story and I said, there is no way I'm going to bring that up, because it was the strangest situation. Because if you think about Rasheed Wallace's relationship with referees over the years, it was impossible. He was the most difficult man in the world to referee, to deal with. It was impossible. So game 7, NBA finals, you get security knocking on the door saying, hey, Rasheed Wallace would like to come into the locker room and talk to you guys. The first thing I said, are you serious? You know, I can only imagine what this fight would be like in this locker room. He would kick our butts. So I actually told a security guy, I said, you know what? No way. I said, Rasheed can't come in the locker room. And then they said, but he wants to come in and talk to you guys. And supposedly he wanted to come in and apologize.
Ooh,
that's what I heard. But this point, guys, too late. It's, you know, based on his credibility, there was no way that we could do that. Impossible. Because I could see you guys writing big fight in the referees.
Right, for sure.
Right. And Danny Crawford. Danny Crawford kicked his butt. So that was an unbelievable situation. And there was no way we could let him in the locker room, guys.
Was there a point, Danny, though, where you – was he ever able to talk to you afterwards? Maybe not that night, but just, you know, at some point down the road?
Difficult individual in my career. He was impossible. I remember I worked the All-Star game in Washington. Rasheed Wallace was an All-Star then. And I remember we were staying in the same hotel and we were going down an escalator. And I remember these little kids asking Rasheed Wallace for an autograph. And he was like waving these kids off like, no, get away from me. And I was like, he is a difficult individual.
Yeah.
So no. I have a few pictures in my portfolio of Rasheed and I, and they're not good. He's coming at me, and I'm going at him. So that's my memory of Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah. How do you handle a player like that, Danny? Because you got some players that will come up and want to just chat with you. Then you got some guys who are really fired up on the floor. They're yelling and screaming. As an official, though, you got to treat them all the same, right? Or no? You tell me.
No, you're right. You're right, Kyle. And game in and game out, it's all different. All bets are off. Our relationship is new, except for Rasheed Wallace. You know what I mean? Because you knew what you were going to get. I hate to say that. And you know what? I hope if Rasheed is listening, he will agree. It was just, I knew what he was all about. And he was just a difficult guy, and he defied authority. And no matter what I said to him, I used to try to massage his ego with child psychology. It never worked in my whole career. So Rasheed Wallace and I, no conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and as all you guys know, me and Sheed go way back. He's a tough one. My most memorable Rasheed Wallace story was in Cleveland, where Jack Nese, a longtime official, had whistled him for a technical foul. And the technical was because he was laughing at Zydrunas Ilgauskas, who was trying to be physical and fell on his face, and she just started laughing at him. And it was a reminder of, you know what? That tech was probably going to get rescinded, but the fact that you are who you are was why it was called in the first place. To Danny's point, he was a tough one to get along with. But Danny, when you think back on your career, though, I mean, were there certain players that were easier to get along with, guys that kind of really, when you think about the guys that you got along well with player-wise, that stand out in your mind?
You know what? There were quite a few. You know, Grant Hill is like the classiest guy that you'd ever want to meet. So, and Ray Allen, I put Ray Allen in that same boat. But, you know, overall, the majority of the NBA players were good. You know, it was a competitive atmosphere, and those guys competed, and we took nothing personally at all. So, you know what? The bad guys stuck out. But the majority of the guys, I would say we all had pretty good working relationships. You know, and they would come at you and get a technical foul, and the next time you saw them, everything was okay, which is pretty much how it should be. So the majority of the guys were good, but there were a few that stuck out.
Danny, Boston fans have this reputation for being extremely passionate. Sometimes that plays itself out nicely, sometimes it doesn't. What was it like coming into Boston to ref a game? And second part of the question, what was it like hearing Tommy Heinsohn screaming at you from the announcer's table and berating every call you made?
Well, Boston, you know, coming at a referee, you know, in the history, you know, in that place is just pretty remarkable. And the fans are really, really knowledgeable. So, you know, I went out west and worked in Portland and worked in Utah, and they were the nastiest fans going. In Boston, you know, they had that reputation of loving that green, okay? And that is true. But you know what? I always thought those fans were, you know, I thought really they were pretty fair. Tommy Heinsohn, that's another story. Okay, so my Tommy Heinsohn story is we looked at a lot of videotape after games. So whenever we'd work a Boston game, we'd always turn the volume down. Okay, there was no way we would listen to the volume of those games because that guy was the worst when it came to referees. It was so unfair. So talk about a homer. That man was flat out a homer. And what's the gentleman's name that worked side by next to him?
Mike Gorman.
So sorry, the nicest man going. And he had to sit next to Tommy Heinsohn, knowing what he was going to get night in and night out. That was difficult. It was difficult for us, and I can only imagine how it was for Mike.
That's hilarious. You know, it's interesting, Danny, because, you know, I look at your career and how many years it spanned, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s, you know, the teens here. How difficult was it to adjust with the game? I mean, we know the 90s physical, bad boys, late 80s bad boys. Like, how did you adjust as an official?
Well, I learned to referee the toughest basketball early on in my career. And I remember looking at those games and seeing Buck Williams and Maurice Lucas in the post. And I remember I wasn't in the playoffs then, and I would look at those playoff games and I would say, geez, I don't know if I'll ever be able to get in the playoffs because I don't know how to referee this stuff. So I guess the point is you learn to adapt. And back then it was more advantage, disadvantage in terms of the physicality. And you'd learn to know when you needed to blow the whistle back then. And even back then with the physicality, the player would say, hey guys, just leave us alone. Leave us alone. We're okay. We're not going to fight. They just wanted to go at it. So back then it was somewhat difficult, but it was advantage, disadvantage. But I think of the younger guys coming in after me, it was almost impossible for them to work. So that's when they started putting in the guidelines. Okay, because once you put in the guidelines, you say this hand is on this guy, that's a foul. If this guy waves his hand at you, that's a technical foul. Because the whole advantage, disadvantage thing, you know, there's an art to that. And you know what? Some guys have better art than others.
Yeah, and Danny, when you know, obviously, right now we're talking about just, you know, adapting to changing NBA game, and certainly once we get back to playing games, things will be a little bit different. One of the things we hear a lot about are games that are going to most likely be without fans in the stands. As a referee, how much of an adjustment is that for you, and does that make your job any easier or more difficult if you don't have, you know, fans, and obviously the Tommy Heinsohn of the world, you can hear them a little more clearly.
Well, from a referee's point of view, it doesn't change at all. okay, because our job is still the same. I think the players are going to have the toughest time adjusting to that atmosphere. My son plays over in Italy, in Milan, and he played a couple Euro games with no fans, and he told me, Dad, that sucked. He said it was like playing a scrimmage. And he said, you know what, it's the worst. He did not enjoy it at all. He said it sucked, and so it's going to be an adjustment for the players. I remember working a game in New York, and they did some kind of test. And the first half, they said, we're not going to have any entertainment and zero music. The players hated it.
Wow.
Because in the warm-up line, you know, they like to kind of get fired up from the music and all that stuff, and there was nothing. And they kept coming over to us and saying, man, this sucks. Man, this sucks. So the second half, they went back to normal, and the players loved it. So that's going to be a huge adjustment to have zero sound in that arena.
Danny, we need some dirt. What's the meanest thing Brad Stevens ever said to you? And does he actually, like, get on officials? Like, it feels like he's squeaky clean, but now when these arenas go silent, I think we're going to see a different side of Brad Stevens out there.
Well, I'll tell you what, Brad is a sneaky, I'm not going to say nasty because he's not a nasty man, but Brad, he gets his shots in. Okay, he defends his team. He defends his players in a classy, professional way. Totally different than Doc.
Really?
Okay, totally different than Doc.
So Doc's not classy and professional,
oh,
right?
Oh. Doc is difficult, okay? Probably one between Doc and Larry Brown, two of the most, and Kevin Lockery, three of the most difficult coaches to actually work under.
Did Doc ever play the Chicago card and say,
he
like,
always hey. Did, but I would throw it right back at him, you know, and tell him, don't give me that Chicago stuff. You grew up in the suburbs. So we used to go back and forth with that all the time.
Right. You know, Danny, we talk about Brad Stevens and, you know, Rasheed Wallace and all the guys, you know, especially Kevin Garnett, that we know are fiery. Was there anybody that was, you know, a really nice guy, but he always whined and always tried to complain during games, always was in your ear? Great guy, but man, he just wouldn't shut up.
You know, the only person that comes to mind is Johnny Newman, which I know I'm going back.
Who
is Johnny Newman? Johnny Newman was the nicest guy in the world, but that guy always had something to say or was always asking questions. And it was like, Johnny, geez, man, let us work. But the nicest man you want to meet, though. I know I pulled that one out of my hat. But but Johnny Newman was one of those guys.
Wow. Johnny Newman.
I know. I'm about to go Google him right now. And
the current player that's retired is Derek Fisher.
Okay.
Derek Fisher. Oh, my God. He was nonstop. You know, it was always, he was like the mayor on the court. He felt that he could always come over and ask what's going on. And then the current player is Chris Paul.
Ooh, CP, yeah.
I could see that. Oh, I could see that. Actually, I have seen that. I mean, if you watch him play, like specifically during timeouts, and Danny knows what I'm talking about, he is totally engaged with a conversation with the officials while the rest of his team getting a rest, getting their Gatorade in. He's trying to get a call, or he's trying to establish something going out of that timeout, always.
You know, he's trying to let you know, number one, he's the president of the Players Association. Right. He will definitely make a point to let you know that and to let you know that he's got a direct line to Adam. Okay. And whenever he gets a technical file, I'm going to talk to Adam about that. Oh, I'm going to talk to Steve Jackson. And it's like, come on.
Danny, what reflecting on your entire career, what was your favorite game? And I kind of guess opposite end of the spectrum. Is there one call that you sit there and go, man, I wish I missed that call. I wish I could go back and change that. Did you linger on a call or did you just move on?
You know what? I'm going way back on a call because I was pretty lucky during my career in that I didn't have many controversial plays other than the push-off guys. But I didn't have many controversial plays. And the one that stands out, and it's way, way long ago, I got into the I think it was the conference finals, and I had a call against Tom Chambers. See, that's what happens. You got you guys get a guy on that's got 30 years of experience.
Oh, we remember Tom Chambers. We remember
Suns. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember calling a critical foul on Tom Chambers, and I know that that was not a foul. And it bugs me to this day. And it was a critical call. And, you know, the interesting thing about it, Daryl Garrettson was a guy that was kind of my backer. And I was working that game with Daryl, and Daryl was very protective of his young guys. And I heard nothing at all about that call, but I knew in my heart that that call was not right. And to this day, that's a play that I'll always remember.
I don't know, Danny, you bring up Daryl Garrettson. I grew up in Philadelphia, man. And mom and dad and grandma, we did not like Daryl Garrettson. We always thought, oh, the Celtics got five officials out there and seven against five on the floor. And so when you look at your career, you've been a part of so many big games. Are you able to enjoy that, though, in the moment, you know, when Jordan hits the shot or something? Do you enjoy that? And can you feel the magnitude of stuff like that?
I do now. But back then, the answer is no. As a matter of fact, looking at these games now, I didn't realize I had four games in the finals, the Utah-Chicago finals in 97-98. Three of the four, Jordan hit a last-second shot to win it. Wow. And, you know, and I forgot about that. I forgot about that, you know, because you're so locked in, and those games were so difficult, and every one of those games were so close. And it was tough to actually enjoy them. But now, sitting back and looking at them, it's no pressure. And now I realize, number one, how good those games were and how good Michael Jackson or Michael Jordan was.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Jackson was pretty good too.
Yeah, Michael.
You're right. You were not wrong with that, Danny. You were not wrong. He was pretty good too. After spending so much time as an official, Danny, I mean, it's just who you are. When you step away from the game, what has this been like for you? And I wanted to ask you specifically, what was it like at the United Center when they had that moment to recognize your retirement, and for once, you were getting cheered?
Well, that felt uncomfortable, number one. You know, for somebody to cheer referee, that felt pretty uncomfortable. But at the same time, you know, you start reflecting on your career and you have an appreciation for what you did. I was involved in a lot of memorable games, and it was really being in the right place at the right time, having the talent for those situations. And I reflect now on that, and it was a pretty nice run. You know, it was, I worked some pretty good games, and it was a lot of fun.
Danny, and you don't have to pick Boston, even though this is a Boston-centric podcast.
Boston.
Right, just saying. Well, what was your favorite city to go? Because us in the media always debate this, our favorite arenas, our favorite places to eat. What was the best place to go on the road for an official?
Oh, I'll throw you off with this one. The Pacific Northwest, Portland. Mm.
Portland, yeah.
Oh my God, the restaurants in Portland are the best. Okay, and you can get in the car and you can drive to the coast. You can go up into the mountains to see waterfalls. You can go to Mount Hood. That Pacific Northwest on a sunny day is the best place in the country.
Hey, have you been to Cafe Dewberry in Portland, Danny?
To where?
Cafe Dewberry.
No, see, okay. I don't have that kind of money.
That A. Sherrod Blakely money, right?
Yeah,
you know what Steve Wallace is treating on this particular road trip money. That's what we're talking about.
Hey, Seattle needs a team. That's all I'm saying. We need to get a team back in Seattle as well.
I totally Absolutely. Agree with you.
Danny, a few more here. You know, the big debate now is Jordan or LeBron. Who's better? Who's the number one all the time? Just from your vantage point, how do you size up that matchup? Or is there somebody else we're leaving out of the conversation? Should we throw Kareem, Magic, Will, Russell? Like, what do you think?
No, you shouldn't throw anybody else into that equation. I have an opinion. I remember 3 months ago, I didn't have an opinion. I left it alone because I said, you know, different eras. And I stayed away from it. But I have an opinion. And I'm not going to tell you guys.
Come on, Danny.
How about that? I'm not telling you. But 2 months ago, I did not have an opinion because I thought it was totally unfair to compare different errors. But
something had to change your mind. But, something had to solidify your opinion, Danny.
It's just like that call, fellas. It's up for debate. You know what? You guys are the experts. You do all the writing. Figure it out.
I love it.
So Danny, I mean, what have you been up to since retiring? I mean, what do you do when you've been running up and down the court, getting on airplanes and all that stuff? What do you do now that obviously you're retired?
I'll tell you one thing that I figured out once I walked away from the NBA, that there was another life. There was another world out here, you know, because that routine, that routine is intense. Everything that you said, Sherrod, airplanes, hotels, meals by yourself, all that stuff. And you guys are involved with it as well. That's a tough, tough life. And when you think about, you add up your Marriott points and you realize, wow, man, I've been in Marriott's for 13 years of my life. Wow. You know what I mean? Oh. So when you get away from it, number one, the first thing you don't do is miss it. Okay. I don't miss that world at all. And running up and down that court, I enjoyed it, but you know what? I reflect back on it and you know what? I don't miss it now. It was really cool to actually be involved in that intense world. But now, you know what? It's pretty cool to be away from it and to be outside gardening and not thinking about that world. So it's been a nice transition that it was time. 32 years of giving the NBA being involved in that intense part of that of a game, and now being away from it, I don't miss it at all.
What was your Marriott point total? What did you buy with them? And what was your favorite Marriott?
Hey, Chris, first of all, I still have over 2 million Marriott points.
Wow.
Right now. I know it. How about that, Kyle? 2 million right now.
Wow.
And not interested at all in using them. Okay, number two. And I don't know if I had a favorite Marriott. Maybe I did. The Marquis in New York.
Yeah,
Marriott Marquis in New York. That was pretty big time. You know, we didn't have any much money to spend on hotels. So we used to always pray that we could get a rate in that hotel. And when we did, we really enjoyed it.
That's good stuff. Danny Crawford, veteran officials, so many games, so many NBA finals games. One last question, Danny, before I let you go, because we talk about the different eras and, you know, people are saying, well, could the yesteryear players play today? Could these players deal with the, you know, rough housing back in the 80s and 90s? Do you think, in my opinion, Danny, is great players, no matter the era, to me, they would be great. Do you agree with that? Disagree? You know, could these players now play back in the 80s and 90s?
I don't know if – I would say yes, because they are professional athletes and they can adjust to whatever, just like you said, Kyle. But I must say, back in the day, that was some pretty tough basketball. And from an officiating standpoint, you know, it was almost impossible to referee those games back in the 90s. And now it's, you know, you're just refereeing jump shots. So it's a much easier game to referee. So would those players be good back in the Isaiah Thomas days? I would hope so, because they're professional athletes.
Right.
And they adapt. You know, they do it in the playgrounds back home. I'm sure they, you know, the ball's not that easy when they get in the playgrounds back home. So I would think they could play. I would think Steph would be as good back in the Isaiah Thomas's days. I'd think so. You know, I know, because he's not tested in that way for the most part. But I know that guy's got a talent to where you get this much daylight, he's going to knock that J down. Okay, so with that hand check and with his handles, I bet you he'd find a way to get that much daylight to shoot that J. And if he gets it, he knocks it down. So there's another debatable thing.
Right.
It's all for you fans to talk about in the bars when they open them up and have fun with it. Okay, I wish I could answer it in an intelligent way, but I really can't.
No, it's all good, Danny. I hope you're staying safe and healthy during these trying times, man. Hopefully we get basketball back soon.
Yeah, I hope so too, guys. Hey, it was good to see you guys, but I'm going to go out gardening right now. So you guys get back to work, okay?
All right, Danny Crawford. Thanks, Danny.
All right, take care, fellas.
A quick time out to tell you to subscribe to any podcast on the NBC Sports Boston Podcast Network for your chance to win a desktop Bluetooth speaker. It's really cool, and I don't have one yet, so you know, get those entries in. If you've already subscribed, you're covered. Just submit a screenshot to show your subscription. You can enter at nbcsportsboston.com/authenticfan.
Great stuff from Danny Crawford. He didn't answer the million-dollar question, though, Sherrod. Jordan or LeBron, you know, all this Last Dance. I feel like everybody, you know, getting nostalgic about Jordan, romanticizing the 90s and Jordan's era, man. And maybe Danny was going to choose Jordan. I don't know.
Well, the bottom line is this. Danny is right on in that it's debatable. No matter which one of those guys he picked, there's going to be a side that disagrees with that. But I think the Last Dance has really it certainly elevated Jordan in the eyes of some folks who maybe weren't even sure about how badass a player he was during that period of time. Steph Curry, great. LeBron's great. Paul George is great. But damn, that MJ,
yeah,
he was a bad dude. The Black Cat was a bad dude.
In 10 years, when we do a LeBron documentary or something, we can all swing back to the other end of the pendulum. But it is a fun debate. I don't think I can pick anyone but Michael Jordan as the GOAT. And that's selfishly just because I grew up during that era and I was so fascinated by Michael Jordan because the Celtics were so terrible and all I wanted to fixate on was the Celtics. I know you guys don't read my stuff, but I did write this week about ML Carr has said for years that if he had a chance to talk to Michael Jordan, he would be able to lure him to Boston while he was playing baseball in 94. He even offered the Chicago Bulls a first round pick, supposedly, to just have a conversation with him. And he was rebuffed because they said he wasn't coming back. But it's been fun to go down that memory point. They wanted Dominique and Jordan. Could you imagine, Drapes, the 88 slam dunk contest playing on the garden floor every night? I mean, as a kid, I was endlessly fascinated by it, and I wanted it to happen.
Exactly. And you know, when they're in their prime, too, not old Dominique or anything like that, you know, can you imagine? But here's the thing, though, and I hate to turn it into Jordan LeBron. To me, LeBron, he's already won. Like, even if you're just having a debate, if you're LeBron, that's all you want, right? The fact that it's a debate, you don't have to be number one. You don't have to, you know, you're in that conversation. And to me, you're one of the all-time. So, you know, this whole who's one, who's two, who's four, who's five, you know, it like Danny said, it's, you know, different eras, different games. Like, if you're LeBron, you know, just be happy you're in the conversation.
But you know what, Drace, but that's just so typical of LeBron's generation. Let's just be happy that we're in the conversation. Michael is not trying to hear that. Michael is like, I'm the baddest one on the block. I'm that dude. LeBron, you had a night. Look, Drace, if we were doing a documentary right now, you know what would be happening right now? I would have that Chromebook or laptop, and I'd be laughing at you for saying that because that's hysterical to me.
Michael but I'm Jordan saying, dude, he's already won, though. The fact that we're having this discussion and we've been having it for 5 years, 6 years now, whatever, it's ever since 2016 when the Cavs won. To me, it'll never be settled, Sherrod. And the fact that you can legitimately have that discussion, to me, means LeBron's, you know what? You already won.
Here's the tiebreaker.
That's LeBron right there. Nah, Michael's got this.
Here's the tiebreaker. Whose Space Jam is better? We'll have to wait and find out. I mean, I'm just saying.
I don't think I've ever seen Space Jam, to be honest with you.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah. No, come on, man. That's an animated movie, bro. I was doing other things at the time, big fella.
That's your homework for next week, Drapes. To watch Space Jam.
Maybe I'll watch it with my son, you know?
Yeah, Nicholas will like that.
What else you guys want to get into?
How optimistic are you that basketball is going to be back? Are you feeling any more confident?
75%.
Woo.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic too. I feel good about it now. One, because it seems that all the key principles are moving in that direction. Two, the weather is starting to be, I think, a little bit more cooperative as far as diminishing to some extent, you know, the ability of the virus to transfer. And three, man, you start looking at NASCAR's back into it. Hockey is starting to kind of put their stuff together, figure some things out.
Baseball.
You've got, I mean, you know, the NBA, I think that there's a greater sense of urgency. And I think that things are going to fall into place where them getting back sooner rather than later makes sense for everyone involved and is not as detrimental from a health standpoint as it would have been maybe last week, last month, or a couple months ago.
It does always come down to money, though, right? And they're motivated to get their paycheck. Now that they're not getting checks, it's going to be like, can we get a few more regular season games in, get those regional sports contracts to the finish line, and then the playoffs. You know, Cantor said something that actually surprised me the other day. He said he's been told that it is guaranteed playoffs will be four rounds of seven-game series. And that surprised me because I thought for sure that they might have to shorten. And maybe that changes if they have to go to a really condensed calendar.
Yeah.
Would you still feel that the champion is legitimized in that?
Yeah.
I'd be even more confident about the champion because that means everyone who gets to the playoffs will have no excuses. Mm-hmm. No one's going to be banged up. No one's going to be hurt. No one is going to be coming off of three games and four nights or any of that crap. Your team is going to be at its peak optimum level come playoff time. No excuses. This will be, in fact, I think this will be the best playoff series across the board that we've ever seen. Because there are no excuses.
I agree. Everybody should be healthy. All those bumps and bruises and nicks and everything should be healed up. It'll be interesting to see because if it is four rounds of seven games, it has to be some back-to-backs, right? I mean, NBA playoffs drag on for 2 months, guys. Are we starting, you know, really going to pick it up, let's say, mid-July and go maybe into September? There might be some back-to-back situations.
I'm okay with that. I think players will be okay with that when they think about how much time they've spent away from the game and knowing that they're going to have to play, you know, a more condensed playoff schedule going in. I don't think that's going to be a problem. And it's not like the NBA has never done that before. Again, we're having some back to the future moments right now when the NBA gets back on the floor. And I'm okay with that.
The first player that tears an Achilles will probably not be okay with that. And yet I understand the desire to get people back out there. If the season does resume, one more thing for you guys. Celtics at an advantage, like Kemba resting his knee, but Jason Tatum losing his momentum. Like, where do you think the Celtics stand in the hierarchy, or is everyone just going to be rusty?
Everyone's going to be rusty.
Yeah, I don't think they get. You look at Philly, and Ben Simmons was banged up in March. Remember, he's dealing with the back. Now he's fully healthy. You look at Toronto. You know, they were dealing with some injuries as well. Arrested Giannis, too, even though he didn't play as many minutes, you know, out west. Arrested LeBron. So I think everybody is an advantage for.
But, Drake, here's a question I got for you guys. End of the day, who do you think will win the title? Who do you think will be the last team standing? Just throw everything out there we've talked about. Who's going to get that chip?
What, Forsberg?
All right. I will step up and I will go first. It's hard for me to bet against the Lakers because I think the whole motivation here is for LeBron in particular wants to get back out there. We saw LeBron and AD when they were healthy. They played to a very high level, two MVP caliber performers. I just think LeBron's motivation in the playoffs would be so much higher than everybody else's based on just where he is at his career. The just wanting to enhance that legacy, especially after watching this Last Dance documentary. So I'll be fascinated to see if it's LeBron who can sort of will them. I know Celtics fans are now unsubscribing to our podcast.
Right.
I think he'll have more motivation. I do think that comes into play.
I agree, Forsberg, and here's why. Because LeBron is going to be rested. Remember during the season, everybody was talking about, man, he's playing so many minutes. You know, he's not, resting at all. And so now he's had, you know, going to have 3 months of rest, come back refreshed. You know, I still think it's a team out in LA. I give the edge to the Lakers, but the Clippers too, man, you know, they got some dogs on that roster. I think the champion comes from out west.
I've been rolling with the Clips from the jump. I'm not getting off the bandwagon now. LeBron, I agree with you guys. He's going to be much better, obviously, with rest on his side. But to Drake's point, he got dogs after dogs after dogs. I think over the course of a seven-game series, I still think that a fully healthy Clippers team can wear down, you know, the Lakers. And let's, and you know, in a if they're playing at the Staples Center, which they probably won't, but let's just assume they were, I love that even more for the Clippers. More so.
Nah, but it won't matter, though. It'll be an empty gym, dude, you know? So it won't matter.
But which team, well, which team do you think feeds more off of the crowd?
Pat Beverly.
Do you?
Patrick Beverly's whole mantra is for the crowd. His whole act is for the crowd. He's like a WWE wrestler, but just happens to be on the basketball court.
You don't think LeBron James feeds off the crowd more than Patrick Beverly?
I don't think so.
The fact that
I think the star players are going to be great. Here's my theory, and tell me if I'm wrong. I think the star players are going to be great. I think the role players will play better without the crowd, right? You know, because it will be a glorified pickup game, a glorified scrimmage. And so, you know, that's something to keep an eye on.
Brad Stevens has to have his team mentally tough in order to compete. And I have faith that he will have them ready for that weird situation, telling them to block out the noise. Kawhi is also a robot, so he probably doesn't need fans.
Right, but it doesn't matter.
So I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to see regardless. Let's just hope we get to see it and see basketball.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's wrap this thing up, man. Thanks for joining the Celtics Talk podcast. Do all the subscribing, like, you know, Forsberg, you're supposed to do that, right?
All right, well, I'll do it. So you go ahead, like, smash the subscribe button. You people have nothing else to do. There's literally nothing in the world right now going on. If you can't have time to go leave a comment, to go check out our YouTube page, then I am very disappointed in you. We gave you great content from Danny Crawford telling you and regaling you with all these stories. If you made it to this point, we appreciate you hanging out. Again, go like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. We'll catch you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.